prizes, fun, trivia, special guests, and you. Yes, it's the return of Theater Geeks Live to the Bristol Opera House, featuring everyone's favorite theater trivia game show, I Know, I Know.
No, I don't I know. I know. Anyway.
Join the geeks, John, Dave, and Marcia, along with Quizmaster Rick Ellis and MC Kevin Agelski, live at the Bristol Opera House, Saturday, November 9th at 10 a.m. $10 admission includes your breakfast, followed by a three-episode taping of Theater Geeks, including our game show, where you just might win one of several fabulous prizes, or at least something funky out of the Opera House basement.
Oh my God, my mind just went totally blank.
Mark the date, November 9th, for Theater Geeks Live at the Bristol Opera House, Bristol, Indiana. All proceeds benefit Elkhart Civic Theater. Call 574-848-4116 weekday afternoons for tickets, or check elkhartcivictheater.org for details. Theater Geeks Live, November 9th, 10 a.m. at the Bristol Opera House. Don't miss it. Before the show gets started, here's a quick note from me about the podcast awards. You have just a couple of days after this podcast releases to nominate Theater Geeks in the Cultural Arts category of the Podcast Awards, and that is at podcastawards.com if you want a little bit more detail on this, plus some recommendations of other podcasts that we think are worth your nominating in other categories. Go to theatergeeks.com/PA13. That stands for Podcast Awards 13. But yeah, theatergeeks.com/PA13. Or if you're ready to vote or ready to nominate, voting comes later, you can go directly to podcastawards.com and nominate Theater Geeks in the Cultural Arts category. We've been nominated for the last 2 years in a row in the top 10, and this year we'd really kind of like to win it. So give us another chance. Thanks.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.
Hi, I'm sorry, I was just checking to see if we were actually recording. I knew we were, but I had to look anyway.
Is he just babbling now?
Yeah. Now he is, yeah.
I'm babbling.
You can cut that out, right?
I may leave it in. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. Today's topic is to mic or not to mic. We find that microphones on actors are sometimes more than annoying, don't we?
Yes, we absolutely. Do. We also find that it negates them ever having to learn how to project their voices past the first row. Okay. And that's not a good thing.
No, and I think that, we've seen this in community theaters and high school theaters around here, where they put a body mic on everyone in the theater, everyone in the cast, and then it's up to someone up in the booth to turn off those mics when they go off stage so you don't hear backstage chatter. And sometimes backstage chatter is not something you want to hear anyway.
I had a guy walk off stage one time and forget that his microphone was on, and somebody had moved his costume that he had set out.
Oh, dear.
And the next word that came out over the intercom system was
not nice.
Not nice.
Uh-huh. And everybody heard it. Plus, yes, right. And we had.
But that's not the only reason not to wear body mics. I mean, there are reasons to wear body mics.
Okay, what are the reasons to have body mics? Why do you have body mics, and what are the situations where, at least from our standpoint, we think that that makes sense? Big auditoriums really is a problem.
A lot of the high school auditoriums don't necessarily, although it's changing as the high school auditoriums are being built, new ones are being built, but the ones that were built in the 70s and 80s, the acoustics were terrible.
Uh-huh.
And so you almost have to mic those people now, or else they'll never be heard.
Well, but they used to use, now back in the day when my kid was in high school, the mics that they used were like, I don't know what you call them, John. There were about three or four mics that were hung, and then there were some that were on the stage floor.
Choir mics. They call those choir mics.
They were not individual.
No,
right. And we used those in high school too.
Have them. Yeah. And as far as I can remember, they worked really well.
But the
kids still had to learn how to project.
To use their voices.
Yeah, I mean, the techies out there who are listening are going to know, what we're talking about. But those are like choir mics.
We also have used the mics that are the little flat ones, which I call PZM mics.
Yeah, and they've got a new kind of those too, which I don't necessarily understand.
Okay, and some of those are good.
And shotgun mics, which are that's what they use at the Met.
Uh-huh.
Our shotgun mics, a series of shotgun mics across the front of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a hall that size, although most of those people have voices that could probably just
And most of those halls were the accent, the emphasis was on the acoustics.
Right.
Sure.
I remember them redoing – when they redid Carnegie Hall, they redid the acoustics three times before they got it. What everybody considered was the best.
Yeah, and it was considered one of the best acoustics in the country when it was built, or in the world for that matter.
Right.
But
so
that's
difficult. It's difficult because let's face it: no matter how good you are as a performer, if the audience can't hear what you're saying, it's all kind of moot, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it is. Mm. And I think that. But I think that for the most part, I think that putting microphones. In areas seems to be, it's preferable only largely because if it can work and you can get the amplification that you need, then the actors are still going to project. They're going to have that presence. And that's the thing. It isn't just a matter of being heard. I think that actors who don't project and get really used to just kind of talking like this into the microphone are not really using their whole apparatus?
The apparatus.
Yeah, they're not really performing.
And that's
snuff.
And I don't know that we're necessarily teaching people how to use their apparatus.
We're not.
Right.
We're
not necessarily.
And so, that's the microphone, and a lot of times becomes a crutch. And for the sound technician, then it's very difficult because if a person's not using their apparatus correctly, I know we call it an apparatus, but it kind of is. You know, it's the whole mechanics of the
instrument
from the diaphragm, or even lower than that, because it's all the muscles of the body have to work together to create that airflow that you need to project your voice.
Well, and if you're projecting your voice, you're putting some energy into it, and you're using I just think everything kind of like. It's the same sort of thing that happens when you put on the shoes that you're going to perform in.
Right.
Or the costume.
Absolutely.
And everything just kind of it's a whole thing. And I've seen too many high school productions, especially where every kid's got a microphone on and they think that they can just talk conversationally like you do
so
at the breakfast table.
So it doesn't help them at all.
And it's weird because even doing this podcast, I sort of project a little.
Oh yeah,
bit. We're all doing it, and it's habitual with us, I guess.
Well, it's the very first thing I talk to kids about when they're on stage, and if we have to use a microphone, and sometimes we do, even here in our theater, which is very acoustically live.
Mm-hmm.
One of the very first conversations I have with the kids is the microphone's not your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Your diaphragm is your friend. The microphone is something that's going to help your diaphragm. And so don't get used to having that little microphone in front of you because it's not really your friend. You need to learn how to do this. And so then we talk about how do you use that? How do you get your airflow?
Not only the airflow, but diction.
Diction is amazing. Yeah.
Oh, I have heard some really sloppy diction in the past couple of weeks.
Right.
Trust me. It's not pretty.
Is that people with microphones?
Yeah, people with microphones. If they do not pronounce things correctly, if they don't concentrate on the consonants, it comes out mush.
Sure. I mean, it's going to come out mush. And you may be loud enough.
Yeah,
but
loud mush.
But it's loud mush, and it may even be worse if the acoustics are fairly good in the house because you get things bouncing around and the mush kind of amplifies itself.
Especially if you don't have a sound system that's really equipped for it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us don't have that kind of money to put those kinds of sound systems into our buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You're just getting kind of a mushy, because the acoustics want to do the work for you. And then you've got other electronic stuff coming in that is doing the work as well, and you've got double duty going on.
Most sound systems, you have to pay quite a lot of money to get that mush filter out on there to add that.
Most theaters don't have a mush filter. A local big theater that went through $1 million of renovation, and their acoustics are terrible.
Yeah,
they are. The sound system did not help.
Care
them
to name names?
No. But I will say, for instance, at Wagon Wheel,
uh-huh.
you really couldn't It's not you can't do it because they used to do it without mics all the time.
Yeah.
But they now have a really, really expert sound guy who follows very carefully, and all the principals wear head mics.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sitting 180 degrees around,
yeah,
you've got to be able to be heard even when your back is to a certain section.
Right, right.
And that requires microphones. But it also requires somebody who knows when your mic needs to come up, mm-hmm, and the other guy's mic needs to go down or out, mm-hmm, and making sure not to let the chorus overpower the soloist or vice versa.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother part of the production, mm-hmm, team. And
if
it's
you really
very
have that much, if you
there.
Have that much audio going, yeah, you've got to have somebody on a
yeah,
board
that really
who's able to ride the sliders and, mm-hmm, yep, and make changes as the show progresses.
And, yeah. And he does. He's yeah. very good. But I have not seen that in other regional theaters or semi-professional theaters right. around here. They have sound systems and they have mics, but it doesn't seem to help very much.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that I'm so sorry, I get tired of looking at people with appendages sticking out of their hair.
The little flesh-colored thing taped to their face
yeah,
and you're supposed to forget that's there.
If you're going to do it, go for the money and get one that you can put in your hairline, not one that looks like it ought to be taped onto Lady Gaga or something, you know?
They look like, I don't know.
They're terrible.
Yeah, they are terrible. But
they annoy me.
I can tell. But yes.
Well, from a distance, you probably can't see them because they're the same color. But if you're
wagon wheel,
you're fairly close, right? No?
Well, wagon wheel, though, they have wig mics.
They have wig mics.
They come through the hair.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and if I could afford them for my cast, I would get them. But they are very expensive.
I know.
And
but
so,
you don't use mics a lot.
We don't use them, no. The only time use a mic is sometimes if an actor has either vocal fatigue or has had laryngitis or some, mm-hmm, and we need to get their voice up and over.
Right.
Or if for some reason we realize that they're just never going to be able to get their voice over the top of a chorus, no matter how far back we pulled the chorus.
That's right.
And that's why sometimes a general miking of a stage doesn't work, because when you general mic a stage, you're miking everybody on the stage. So not only are you miking the leads, but you're miking the chorus as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we found, like, for example, last summer, we had three people who, one was a fairly untrained performer who, we taught about projection but still trying to get their voice up over a 30 member chorus was difficult. So we mic'd them to be able to get their voice up and over. And another who went through vocal fatigue during the rehearsal process, was having a hard time getting their voice up and over without hurting themselves. We don't want somebody to damage themselves either.
No, of course.
So again, slap a microphone
on.
But we try not to do it.
Rule.
As a general rule, we try not to use
it. The only time I can remember having one used was when Colleen totally lost her voice in a Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she was the lead and she had some killer numbers to sing.
Right.
So John said, we're going to have to put a mic on her. But she was the only one.
Yeah.
Now, you brought up something else a minute ago. You said something, you know, I'll spend the money on the mic. And really, there's a bigger point than just, you know, getting ones that you can't see. And that is, I think that if you, especially on wireless equipment, if you go cheap, you get what you deserve, because I think you're better off not having mics at all if you've got mics that sound bad, because that'll drive an audience out of the house. Mm-hmm. I think to have mics that either crackling
feedback
a lot or that cut in and out, that kind
of
thing is really bad.
But that also sometimes also can be a whole nother conversation. You know, as we talk, sometimes we come up with other topics.
Okay.
I mean, that's the use of cell phones sometimes also. It doesn't matter how good the microphone is.
Really?
Sometimes if people put their either text or take a phone call or their little phone goes off during a show, it can affect the microphones. In fact, I could tell you right now, it happened one time and it was my fault. And it was a show that I directed.
Wow.
I thought I had turned my phone off at intermission and I didn't. And it went off and the lead's microphone cut out.
Well, then you can also say, what's the difference between doing what I do, which is just putting my phone on vibrate so it doesn't ring, and actually turning the whole thing off.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a difference there, but I'm pretty sure that there's a reason why we say turn them off.
Well, because you don't want to say turn on vibrate.
I figured they were on a different enough frequency that they shouldn't interfere with each
other.
They
do, though. They can. Yeah.
Wow.
We'll have to test that out, Dave.
But, I mean, so...
You know, we'll call each other during a show.
We'll call each other during a show. Okay.
Yeah, right.
I'm trying to get back on topic here.
Sorry.
But I was just thinking that, you know, I've been to theaters where they mic also. And because, again, they rely on the mic or... The auditorium really doesn't need it. The microphones get in the way. And I would have just preferred and have actually said one time to a tech director from another theater, I would just prefer that you don't use the microphones. I think that you would be better off if you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I know where you said this, and I think you're absolutely right. You have to know what to do with your actors so that you don't need them.
Right. And sometimes it's and you know, there's a reason why sometimes soloists come to center stage, because a lot of times that's where your better acoustics are.
That's right.
You know, and so sometimes it's also a director's problem with if you don't want to use the microphones, then know where your acoustic hotspots are on the stage so that you can help your actors.
Right.
You know, and so it becomes I think there was a reason that Ethel Merman always walked down center to sing her solos.
Oh, she has such a sweet voice.
Well, but you know,
my grandmother said she has such a sweet voice.
Oh, really?
Ethel Merman. Yes.
Did she believe that?
Wah! She sat in the third balcony to see Annie get your
gun.
But that's the thing, though. But she hit the third balcony.
She could hit the third balcony, and she sounded great. Now with recordings, though, we're going, oh my gosh, what was this? What were they thinking casting this woman? Well, it was because she had a voice and she knew how to use her apparatus.
Shattered.
Well, and that's the same. Acting styles and singing and musical styles have changed as technologies made things possible.
Because now they all use head mics.
But I don't have a problem. Sometimes I'll be honest, though. With the head mic, if it's a good mic, you can get that really – you know, a performer really has a chance to do some nuanced stuff that they never had a chance to do before because it never would have been heard.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, and
you know, so there are some advantages to microphones. If you're working in a show – trying to think of what a good show would be where there's that kind of vocal nuance, or a rock and roll show,
which is like nothing but blast.
No, but even a modern show, some modern show
stuff,
but like Once
has to be,
don't you think? Once,
well, they use mics.
They use mics, but it's the flavor of the show,
acoustic,
but it also helps them with that nuance of that
that
music. So I'm not going to say that microphones are always an issue, but like you said, then if you're going to use microphones. Like Marcia said, get somebody that knows what they're doing to run them. And like Dave said, get somebody who knows what a good microphone is and buy a good microphone.
You buy bad microphones
and
you're in
trouble.
You said
something right today.
There we go. The other thing, the other reason to mic, and we do it for this purpose as well, but it's kind of a separate system, and that is that we have the assisted listening devices for folks who are hearing impaired.
Right.
But that's a different – kind of a different animal though, and I think that if you're – but that's not really for
– That's not for the audience.
So it's not really for the audience. It's for individuals who hear that. So, you know, really anything that we're talking about here probably doesn't have a lot to do with that, but I just didn't want to ignore that.
Although I have listened – I don't know. A couple of times I'll put one of those assisted listening devices in and sit and watch the rehearsal with a device in my ear.
And just to hear a lot better.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well,
it's amazing.
Maybe we should give everybody in the audience an assisted device.
Well, with our audiences, maybe we should.
I think it's a combination of learning how to breathe and project your voice and diction.
I do wish more theaters would teach people how to use their device. I mean, that's the actor, that's where it comes from is – I mean, and like you said, Dave, it brings a whole different energy when you're using your body correctly from head to toe.
Yep.
Right.
And, you know, and we don't teach that enough. I mean, I don't when I'm directing
I have noticed – well, I guess everybody noticed there's a lot of theater companies around here, local theater companies, are offering classes to kids. And I'm really wondering if diction and vocal support – is included in what they teach.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, but I wonder if it is.
I know like in our early class, the one that we teach for kids, kids 8 to 11, that teacher, Annette Kazanowski, does teach how to use the apparatus. And it's funny because I can tell her kids. When they walk out on stage, I can tell the kids who have gone through her class.
Really?
Yeah,
you can hear them.
Well, and they have good diction. They create good characters. So it's, I mean, and it's not that we can't do that as directors. That's our job anyway, is to help people with their diction and their apparatus. Blah, blah. I hate that word now is starting to drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. But building their character, using their voice, getting their good diction, making sure they have good enunciation, whatever. When you have a good teacher who teaches with you can see that in the kids because you have a lot less work to do with them.
And it's I'm sure it's much easier if they start young to
it does
learn
help.
That than
yeah.
to take somebody who's 40 or 50 years old and try and get them
but
to
you can
use
still
their
do it.
Diaphragm.
Yeah, you can still do it, though.
I really didn't learn how to project until I started doing theater on a regular basis after I was –
What was that?
I didn't really learn how to project. Excuse me.
I didn't hear you.
I didn't learn how to project really until – I started doing community theater.
Me either.
And I got to the point, and that was like in the – well, but I did plays in high school, and I don't think – I think I knew we had to project, but I didn't really know exactly how to do it. And it was – seriously, it was in this theater trying to hit the back wall and realizing that I wasn't doing it and finally getting, oh, I'm really not loud enough. I mean, it was
Wiggins.
Like, oh, God, I couldn't believe I wasn't.
Mrs. You know? Wiggins, eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I can't hear you. What? I can't hear you. She would do every rehearsal from the back row of the high school auditorium.
Yep.
And we were doing a show. Well, I can't remember what the show was now. And she would not let us go. I mean, that you would hear it constantly. I can't hear you. I could see her standing on the back wall. She just passed away like last month. And she was a great teacher. Standing against the back wall with her arms folded. I can't hear you. I can't. And we learned. We learned what we needed to do, not to hurt ourselves, but to make sure that we could be heard.
Yes.
Well, not that this has anything to do with microphones, but directly. But we had we used to have a lot of smoking in the theater years ago, of course, and now we don't. But there are we still have left over these big metal round ashtrays.
Yeah.
That I think they used to sit on a pedestal and stuff like that. Well, when I direct a show, we put it on the director's table, and one of those on the director's table, and when we can't hear people, we bang on it. It's like,
it's the
projection gong.
I have
the projection gong. So So
first rehearsal with the gong is always a little bit.
Oh yeah! Oh my gosh!
Like, nobody can hear. Really?
Yeah. I've been rehearsing this for 6 weeks or 4 weeks, and you can't hear me. So yeah, we do push it even here.
There's all kinds of tricks you can use to make actors aware that they're talking into the void. You know,
that's right. Yeah.
So, and hopefully it helps them, but I would say don't use a mic unless you absolutely have to, because I don't know anybody around, well, except maybe at the Lerner, where it's a 2,000 seat house.
Larger houses is different. But
between 200 and 300 seats, you should not have to use a microphone.
No, and most community theaters are dealing with smaller audiences, smaller houses than
most
a couple thousand. So I think it makes sense like that. And I think that the first step ought to normally be try to do some general miking if that's going to work. And then the body mic is kind of the last resort.
When we've been at the Lerner, our best miking has been with just a general shotgun miking.
Yeah.
Really?
And that idea came from one of our sound technicians who loves to watch the Met when he goes to the movie theater to watch the Met.
Me too.
Yeah. And he noticed that they were using shotgun mics across the front of the stage, and he said, I wonder how that would work. And that's when we've had our best miking.
Well, that's what we did when we took our excerpt over there the one time, and they put mics on the floor.
Just mics on the floor.
Two shotguns there.
And when we did Meet Me in St. Louis at the Jimtown High School here locally, we used five or six shotgun mics across the front for the majority of the show. We did have the leads, though, on individual headsets as well. And the reason for that then was because, like I said, the shotgun mics will pick up literally everything.
So
what you need then is you still need your leads to be able to come out over the top of that chorus work. And that's when you still mic them up.
Well, I think that kind of wraps up the discussion here. Remember, folks, you can listen to Theater Geeks at the website, theatergeeks.com. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher On Demand Radio, and, of course, at the Blueberry Network at blueberry.com. That's B-L-U-B-R-R-Y, blueberry with no E's, .com. And a whole lot of other favorite podcasters that you might like to use. Be sure to stop by our online store where you can stock up on geek gear such as hats, cups, mugs, teddy bears, T-shirts, sweatshirts, and all sorts of imprinted items, including John's favorite.
I don't know. Do I have a favorite?
You're supposed to.
You like.
For the last 3 years of 3 years now, right? Four. I've been saying underwear. Mm-hmm. I still think it's kind of funny that we sell underwear. So underwear.
Okay.
Pink underwear for girls.
All right.
No, they have boxer shorts now.
Oh, let's see, John.
I haven't bought any yet.
Oh, there you go. And they got
maybe I'll wear them at our live podcast.
That's right. We're doing our live podcast, by the way, is November 9th.
Yay.
Saturday, November 9th in the AM. You can get information about this either at theatergeeks.com or at ElkhartCivicTheater.org. All proceeds from the live podcast, which includes your breakfast and three live
shows.
Don't
say breakfast because they're going to say eggs and things.
Yeah, it's continental breakfast. And you can it's going to be a whole lot of fun, and you can buy tickets. There's prizes. That's true. There are prizes. It's our game show, I Know, and which we've done it a couple times in the past, so you can go back and listen to previous episodes and see just how much fun it is, and that stuff like that. You can order tickets at ElkhartCivicTheater.org, by the way, right online if you wish, or you can call. All the details are at either one of those two websites. And again, all the proceeds support our home theater, Elkhart Civic Theater. That's it from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.